This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you very much. I can start and welcome everyone at the 30th meeting of the Cross-Community Working Group on Enhancing ICANN Accountability Workstream 2 Human Rights Subgroup on August 1st at 1900 UTC. On this beautiful summery day, I welcome you all from Amsterdam. And we are quite far in the work of going through the comments that came in after the public comment period that we held. I can start. Would you please be so kind to take the roll call from the Adobe Connect room? And everyone who is on the audio bridge and not in the Adobe Connect room, could you please make yourself known so that we have a full roll call? From the absentees, I have seen an email from Marcus Kummer, who apologized because of a Swiss holiday that brought about patriotic and social obligations. I'm sure Marcus is living up to those obligations. Has anyone got a statement, an update to their statement of interest that they would like to share with us? No? Then any agenda bashing? I suggest we continue with last week. We've been going over the comments from the government of Brazil, made some conclusions for that, for a preliminary draft for our response to the public comments. I suggest we continue with reviewing the comments from the UK government and the Swiss government, and then it would seem that we have resolved the comments so we could then finalize our draft response that we'll submit to the CCWG. But we might be getting ahead of ourselves, but that seems to work plan. Is everyone still okay with going ahead like that? I see no comments, so I expect that people find that okay. Brenda, would you please be so kind as to pull up the highlights document? Wow, sometimes Brenda is faster than I can think. But luckily I can speak faster than I can think as well, so that helps. Perfect. And I got full control as well. So much. So we were please remind me, we were done with the comments from the government of Brazil. But I think we did not touch yet the comment from the government of Switzerland. Or did we, and we were we already done with Switzerland? I think we were at this comment, right?
I believe we had just completed Brazil.
Exactly. So then we are here at the comment from the government from Switzerland that I will read out and then ask for the people in the room to share their thoughts and ideas on how we shall respond to this. So, from the government of Switzerland, we got, accordingly, we propose that the following paragraph on page 4, under internationally recognized human rights, be reworded as follows. However, because they, and that refers to internationally recognized human rights, only create obligations for states, by committing to one of these international instruments, nation states are expected to embed human rights in their national legislation. Businesses should respect human rights as set out in the UN Guiding Principles on Businesses and Human Rights. Ayana's hand is up. Tatiana, please come in.
Hi, everyone. Tatiana Trofina is speaking for the record. I think that while this statement is true, adding it would create a lot of confusion for all of us. For one simple reason, in this framework of interpretation, we are not only talking about ICANN as a business organization, but we are also talking about ICANN community, and this is something completely different. So I think that for avoiding confusion, to avoid any confusion, we should not mention Ruggie principles there. We might mention them as we did somewhere else, but I don't think that this comment is anyhow helpful because it's just a statement. Thank you very much.
David McCauley. David, please come in.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Niels. David McCauley here for the record. I agree with what Tatiana just said, and I've said this before, but I'd like to say it again because I agree on the with respect to the comment on the Ruggie principles. And I think it's important. I recognize that the Ruggie principles are touched on by the government of Brazil, the government of Switzerland, and the government of the UK. And I recognize, you know, the way they write it, they're good faith, these are good authors. I just disagree, and I think it's an important difference of opinion, so I want to note it. The Ruggie principles are not limited to internationally recognized human rights as required by applicable law. That's a hard-fought phrase that we got to in Workstream 1, and I think we got to it because we recognize that ICANN is sort of a quasi-business and a very complex but important part of coordinating the DNS. Ruggie does refer to internationally recognized human rights, but it does so in expansive terms, in my opinion at least, and not as limited by applicable law. Secondly, ICANN took on a duty, and I'm speaking now also about Ann Aikman-Scalise's email, where she suggested that ICANN need not do this, but maybe the registries and registrars should have incentives, voluntary picks to recognize Ruggie. And while it's a good sentiment, I think that they are sort of the business end of the DNS coordination, and should not, you know, the scale should not be tipped in favor of them adopting Ruggie. They're free to do it today on their own. Finally, with respect to specific points, the obligations under Ruggie are not just to respect human rights, but to seek to prevent, mitigate adverse human rights impacts that are directly linked to their operations, products, or services, or by their business relationships, even if they haven't contributed to those impacts. And business relationships is a loose term, and in the DNS it includes registrants, registrars, registries. In the important work that's going on here, I think we should recognize that ICANN is a good social actor. We may disagree with some opinions and decisions it makes from time to time, but it's a good social actor. And until there's a demonstrated need for something more than the bylaw, I think we should not have a statement making reference to the Ruggie principles. Thanks, Niels.
Thank you very much, David. And I see that there is some discussion in the chat. I'd like to mention that this is not the only, there is the UN Guiding Principles for Business and Human Rights are mentioned later in the text where they can give guidance for the implementation, but here we're talking about the interpretation, about the text where it says that internationally recognized human rights are applicable to states. So thus far we have people sticking to the agreed consensus and the agreed structure. Greg, please come in.
Thank you, Niels. You actually made a lot of the point I was about to make, which is that this is not the right place to be mentioning Ruggie, because this is the place where we are creating the framework for interpreting the bylaw itself, which means that we need to talk about the whole point of this was to allow for a consistent interpretation of the bylaw across different parts of the community, and you know that's the point of this document. So, you know, we and the bylaw as drafted does not support the inclusion of this language. Thank you.
Thanks so much. So it seems that there is no there is not really support from this comment from the government of Switzerland, and it's also not really seen how this is how this would help at this point. Is there anyone else who would like to make a point about this? If not, then we will probably... Oh, Tatiana has her hand up. Tatiana, please come in. Oh, that wasn't all a hand that got away again. Okay. Okay, I guess we'll leave this comment to the side then, and then we'll continue with the next paragraph, which reads, as to internationally recognized human rights, a reference to the UNGP as standard for business enterprises should be included, as mentioned above. In addition, references to other universal human rights agreements from the UN should be included, such as the Conventions on the Rights of the Child, the International Convention for the Protection of All Persons from Enforced Disappearance, the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhumane, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, and then a link for reference. Furthermore, also the humanitarian international public law should be considered, such as the Geneva Conventions. Finally, there are also relevant regional agreements which should be considered, such as the European Convention on Human Rights and the Budapest Convention on Cybercrime. Tatiana, please come in.
Hello, Tatiana Trepina speaking for the record. I have to admit that I'm really a bit flabbergasted about this comment of the government of Switzerland, especially with the... I'm sorry, can those who don't speak mute their microphones? Because I hear a terrible echo, I hear my own voice. About the mention of Geneva Conventions on cybercrime conventions and so on, I just do not understand what is the purpose of this. Is ICANN going to engage itself in armed conflict? Because Geneva Convention mostly refers to armed conflicts. Budapest Cybercrime Convention, it's exactly my area of work. It's my main job. And again, is ICANN going to carry out as business criminal investigations, which is a domain of law enforcement agencies? So I believe that this is absolutely, absolutely out of any scope of the framework of interpretation. Humanitarian law and criminal investigations are not anyhow related to ICANN mandate. So I'm a bit surprised that it made to the public comment at all. I just don't understand the purpose of this. So I would be completely against this. As to RAGI principles, my comment stands as it is, so to the RAGI principle part. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tatiana. Do other people have an opinion about this? I think if I pull up the text here, I don't think we make an exclusive reference currently to say that only these documents are human rights, right? So. I am not sure. I don't think that our current text says these documents are human rights and these not. But I think that there is sufficient room and space for people to bring up these documents if they would be relevant. But I'm also having a hard time to bring in these documents because I think they might create more uncertainty and despair then that might bring clarity in a framework of interpretation, which is what the framework of interpretation is supposed to do. So I tend to agree with Tatiana on this, but I would also like to hear from others. I see Avery disagrees. Avery, would you like to come in and comment? Okay, so would you like to, you, Avery writes that she does not want to speak, so are, would you like to include all these documents, or where, and, oh, Avery has her hand up. Avery, please, come in.
Yeah, this is Avery speaking. It's not something I want to speak on, because I do believe it's a lost cause, but I do believe that we're constantly striking out things that we don't want to deal with and we worry about. And I think that's problematic. I think on any of these things, there are aspects that may be relevant, but we're constantly saying no, that they don't. And then we say that they go against the bylaws, but that's not explained to me how they go against the bylaws. So I think the fact that in a framework of interpretation, we do not want to consider all the possible rights, we just want to consider a couple that we think are safe, is something I think is unfortunate. But I don't see much point in speaking about it because, you know, I'm in a minority of one here. So, hey, thanks.
Thanks very much, Avery. Well, I'm not sure if there are factions, and if factions have been formed. So everyone's opinion is very much worthwhile, because we've been on this for a while together. So Tatiana, I'd like to respond. Tatiana, please come in.
Hi, Tatiana Chopina speaking for the record. I would like to respond to Avery. The point about Geneva Conventions and Cybercrime Conventions is that they are related to all these human rights which are already in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other international instruments. Like, look at the rights of combatants and non-combatants in the international humanitarian law. They are the rights which are regulated under the particular regime of armed conflict, but they would be the same rights. Prohibition on torture, right for life, and so on. I do believe that in any case, the list is not exclusive. I don't believe that we are excluding any rights by not mentioning Geneva Conventions. Now, my perfect example is the Cybercrime Convention. I do not understand why anyone would like to mention it. If you open the convention, there is only one article, which is called Human Rights and Safeguards, and which refers to the international instruments. There is nothing about human rights in the Cybercrime Convention, but this is even not the point. The point is that Cybercrime Convention, it's about harmonization of international of national criminal and national criminal procedure law. And it applies only to governments and only to law enforcement agencies, only to legislators and only to law enforcement agencies. So, for example, adding the Cybercrime Convention shows, if we do this, it will show an utter lack of our understanding of what international human rights are, what they actually contain. So, I don't think we are excluding any rights. I just don't believe that particular instruments are related to what we are doing, because they do not mention particular human rights. They do not refer to them. They refer to particular regimes, like crime investigations, for example. To make a compromise, to marry two positions, like of those who just want to include like any instruments which seems relevant, like Cybercrime Convention on the first sight, and which is not, we can always say that the list is not exclusive. I also believe that the list is not exclusive for one simple reason. We don't know how digital rights will be developing. Maybe in 2 years we'll have another universal declaration on digital rights, which will be human rights. This is why we do have to mention that this list is not exclusive, as applicable law is not exclusive as well. So I honestly do not understand why we are antagonizing here, because I do believe that we are trying to cover all human rights. It's just some instruments are not relevant because they do not contain human rights. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jana. Greg makes some points in the chat that it doesn't seem we're cherry picking right. Adley says UDHR, but we're not just quoting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. There are quite a number of instruments that are quoted, and I think it says including, so if we go back to our document, we say internationally recognized human rights, then we have a footnote, and it says including the UDHR, the ICCPR, the ICESCR, the International Convention on Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, and ILO's Declaration of Fundamental Principles and Rights at Work. And I don't think we're excluding any document. So when we were talking to the GECT, there were GECT members from Germany that also mentioned a number of UN resolutions, for instance, the right to privacy in the digital realm, etc. But I think if we're going to start making exclusive lists, we're making it actually harder to include other documents. It just seems this is like the basic documents, but it could be any more. And then I think especially a regional document is very problematic, because then we are mixing us into the jurisdiction problem. So AFRI says including but not limited to. So accept the China proposal for indication the list is not complete. Okay, we can add, so the text will be in the footnote, including but not limited to. What about that? So that seems to be the consensus. So let me type that in the Google Doc, and then Bernie, I'm sure, is also noting that. So in the footnote with the documents, we say including, but we add but not limited to. Perfect. So that seems to satisfy all sides. I see Greg's hand is up. Greg, please come in.
Thanks. Greg Chapman for the record. Actually, winding back just a little bit, I think my comment, maybe it's a bit redundant, is that we have to consider in each case what level we're at. You know, this is the level of interpreting the bylaw, which is essentially a level of bylaws compliance, essentially putting the force and imprimatur of the bylaw behind anything that goes into the framework. Next level is the second document we have, which is essentially guidance to implementation at the policy level, if you will, or instantiation in policy, to avoid using the word implementation to refer to putting policy in, to making policy. Below that, you know, there's a level of what goes on in the actual policy discussion. So I think nothing is excluded. Everything, all avenues are open. The question is just what is kind of essentially dictated or instructed by the bylaw itself as a bylaw. So that is kind of the, you know, what we have to think. Just because something is excluded from one level, unless it's actually prohibited at that level, it's not excluded from being dealt with at the next level down. A particular PDP could make all kinds of decisions relating to human rights beyond what is required by the bylaw. The bylaw is essentially a floor and not a ceiling. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. I would definitely agree with that. And I think with that, we are also pretty much done with the discussing of this comment from the government of Iceland. So I propose we go to the next one. Is that a new hand, Greg, or is it an old one? Oh, so that's an old one, I think. So, let's go to the next point, and that is regarding the interpretation of the section as required by applicable law. We consider that this element should never be used as a means to implicitly relativize the universality of human rights, subjecting and or constraining them to national legislation. It would be desirable to include expressly that this means to comply with all applicable laws and respect internationally recognized human rights. Which is interesting because, as we went in earlier discussion, so I think Greg's previous comment makes a lot of sense. The bylaw is a floor, not a ceiling, and it also in relation to the previous comment that in the bylaw where it says that only states are bound by international human rights law, it's hard to see how this would work and what it would concretely mean. I'm very curious what other people have to say about this comment and suggestion from the government from Switzerland. Please come in.
Niels, hi, it's David McCauley. Did you just call me? I'm having audio difficulties.
Yes, I called you, David. Please come in.
Thanks, and I apologize for this. I'm just struggling. My phone is really coming in and out. I just wanted to ask, what did we just agree with respect to including but not limited to? And the reason I ask is, as I put in chat, I don't think we could have any language that goes beyond internationally recognized human rights as required by applicable law. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. And that was generally also the sense that we had when we discussed this earlier, and it's very much in line with our other comments. So perhaps we don't need to discuss this in very much detail unless someone else might want to. Doesn't seem like it. So that means we have addressed the comments from the government of Switzerland. And now let's continue to the comments from the government of the United Kingdom. So let's have a look at this comment. The argument that the entirety of the UN guiding principles could not be cited as a reference point or source of guidance for interpreting ICANN's human rights core value is readily understood and accepted. Much of the text is concerned with state responsibilities. However, it is very disappointing that there is no reference in the framework to the UN guiding principles despite the direct applicability of key elements of the second pillar relating to the corporate responsibilities. These relate, for example, the conduct of due diligence, ensuring transparency, the undertaking of impact assessments, instituting mechanisms for correcting negative impact, and generally integrating a culture of commitment to respect human rights throughout the organization. As such, they provide fundamental elements of universal best practice for effective adherence to human rights and therefore merit direct reference in the framework of interpretation. Even though I would not doubt the truthfulness of some of the observations made here by the government of the UK. Where the government of the UK is pointing at is the implementation of the bylaw in which the UNGPs would be useful, and that is exactly what we are saying in the framework of interpretation, which is, as we clearly discussed, not the framework of implementation. And thereby, there have been the issues about chain responsibility, and we did not want to make ICANN the de facto regulator of GTLDs and CCTLDs. So I actually think that what we have done is in line with what the government of the UK would like us to do, albeit maybe not in exactly the way that they are suggesting here. What do you all think? And I'm just trying to channel the thoughts and get a discussion going, because as a rapporteur, of course, I cannot set the opinion of the group. So, group, please speak. And Tatiana is there. Great. Tatiana, please come in.
Hi. Tatiana Tropina is speaking. I'm really, really terribly sorry for that, but I'm speaking too much here on this call. I think that, again, going into RAGI more than we did misses one point. And the point is that I don't think that it would be a problem if ICANN organization will commit to RAGI principle as business. I think that in terms of framework of interpretation and ICANN community, it's not even about interpretation versus implementation. It's also about how the different parts of the community will take into account human rights in their policy making as considerations. And this is completely different from what RAGI principles can offer us, can bring us. Because basically it's not up to GNSO, for example, to seek for the remedy, or not probably for any part of the community or for advisory committee. Basically, the main purpose of this framework is not only to make ICANN respecting human rights. I think the main concern about human rights for the ICANN and its activities is how community is making policy taking into account human rights. And RAGI principles, they are not talking about policy. They do not provide policy instruments. They do provide operational instruments. If we want, we can mention in the framework that ICANN as organization can decide to commit to RAGI principles. Fine with me. But making, like, using a hammer when we need a drill, using a set of operational principles when we need to think about policy, when it comes to ICANN community, when it comes to supporting organizations and advisory committees, I don't think that this will make us any good, because it's just simply missing the main point. It misses the policy making point. So that's my opinion. I think that it comes again to the point that this framework has to be, covering three parts: ICANN organization, ICANN community, and ICANN board. And if we are talking about RAGI principles, they will be applicable to ICANN organization, because they really have nothing to do with policy making. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tatiana. I think that would actually be interesting to see whether we could add that, because that might be a head nod to the comments, that we could add that ICANN, the organization, the corporation, could consider adopting the UNGPs. So, So in the sentence that is in the paragraph, consider how the interpretation and implementation of this bylaw will interact with existing and future ICANN policies and procedures. Then we have, when examining its operations, ICANN, the organization, could also consider instruments such as HRIAs to assess their impact on human rights. That we could make that, but this is just me thinking out loud. When examining its operations, ICANN, the organization, could also consider framework like the UNGPs, as well as specific instruments such as human rights impact assessments to assess their impact on human rights and offer remediation. Is that something that people would could live with? I think it would be nice if we have some changes in response to the comments, because it might seem that we are not listening whatsoever. Is this something that people could see? I put it here in the Google Doc. I will read it again in total, as David is asking, so I'll put the full text here as well. So when examining its operations, ICANN, the organization, could also consider a framework like the UNGPs, as well as specific instruments such as HRIAs, to assess its impact. That's a mistake, so organization is singular. But to assess its impact on human rights and offer remediation. However, this is up to ICANN, the organization. However, it is up to ICANN, the organization, to develop and implement. The results of such HRIAs should be reflected in ICANN's annual reporting. It seems we need to do some wordsmithing there, because this is a bit of a mess. Yeah, it needs editing, especially that last sentence that we didn't even, not last, but a sentence before that. However, it is up for ICANN, the organization, to develop and implement. If people are okay with adding the suggestion that ICANN, the organization, could use the UNGP, but it needs to decide for itself, and HRIAs, then I will seek if I can offer some text and share it with you on the list. Would that be okay? Oh, I see there are hands up. Sorry, I was focused on my other screen. Greg, please come in.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record. I guess I'll need to look at this in the document. My concern, again, has to do with kind of where it is in the layer cake, that if this is about interpreting the bylaw, you know, in other words, reading the bylaw in a consistent manner, I don't think this is the right place to do it. If we're in the part of our documentation where we're kind of giving guidance, which, you know, could or could not be used to move forward in implementing or in operationalizing the bylaw, then I'm more receptive. But I think we need to be careful in how we deal with the part of the document that says what the bylaw says, because the bylaw doesn't say any of that. It doesn't prohibit it. It doesn't mean it can't be guidance from us. It can be guidance from the government of the UK, but it's not a bylaws interpretation. So we just need to make sure we're saying it in the right place and the right way, or else we risk putting more into the bylaw than is actually in it. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Greg. And I very much agree. Is this in the latter part where we say might, could, you know, so in, so let's see. Let's see if we can draft something, or maybe David McCauley has a suggestion. David, please.
Niels, thanks. It's David McCauley for the record. I tend to agree with Greg's initial comments as to where this fits in the layer cake. Remember, we have made a reference to the fact that the SOs can consider HRIAs in their own operations. We need to see where this fits in and how this affects that. I also think before we did something like this for ICANN, the organization, we should get someone from ICANN, the organization, to give their views on this. This language could be quite a burden for them. I mean, there's a little bit of a misnomer in the Ruggie principles, calling them guiding principles. Let me just read one part of the Ruggie guiding principle, and it says, 13 says, the responsibility to respect human rights requires that business enterprises, I'll skip Section A, seek to prevent or mitigate adverse human rights impacts that are directly linked to their operations, products, or services by their business relationships, even if they have not contributed to those impacts. And we all know that, at least by strong implications, human rights claims may be recognizable as claims to be brought at IRP. And the lawyer can take that language and make it into an obligation. We need to be careful here, is what I'm saying. And I've said many times, and I tend to strongly believe this, we should not boil the ocean on the human rights obligation of ICANN. Let this get in place. This is a strong statement that they've made in the bylaws. They're going to respect human rights. But I'm worried about the language that you're drafting. I think it would take very careful drafting and looking at how it impacts other parts of the document. Thank you.
Thanks very much, David. Tatiana, please come in.
Thank you very much. Everyone knows here that I'm not a fan of Ruggie at all. I'm a strong opponent of Ruggie, especially when it comes to ICANN. But I also do believe that if we are to mention them in a framework of interpretation at all, it hurts much less to mention and say that ICANN as organization might in the future consider Ruggie principles as useful guidance, might consider, and leave it to ICANN organization to decide, than make any broader interpretation of Ruggie principles. I do believe that if we are talking about ICANN org, it's even more narrow than what we already put in the framework of interpretation. But actually, I also do believe that what is already in the framework of interpretation was agreed between all of us. It was a consensus language. And here I also agree with David that why are we going to break it again and go into all these Ruggie circles? We've been there already. I think we should be done with this. So I think that probably the best idea would be to reject this comment from the UK government because we discussed it so many times. But after I thought about this many times, I also think that if we're talking about Ruggie, it's more about ICANN organization and their consideration on whether to commit to Ruggie or not, because otherwise they don't have really implications on the community and policy making at all. It's only organizational risks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tatiana. So we will Bernie has his hand up. Bernie, please come in.
Thank you, Neil. I can't speak officially for ICANN, the organization, but I'm in line with what David and Tatiana have said. And if this language is not very carefully crafted, I think there would be significant concern, and that would be really unfortunate at that point. Thank you.
Uh, Okay. So, so am I hearing it well that perhaps the suggestion made by Tatiana of adding the text that ICANN might consider adopting the UNGPs down the road will create more problems than it would solve, or are we going to work a bit on a text on the mailing list? Because I don't want to push anything on everyone. I'm just trying to listen what people are saying. What we do not have in, I'm responding to Tatiana, who says, I don't believe it will create problems, but I believe we already have Ruggie and it's enough. What I do like is the comment that you just made, and that there's a difference between ICANN the organization and ICANN the community. And that the UN guiding principles are not relevant for the community, but that it could be relevant for ICANN the organization. I kind of like that differentiation, and I think it would help if we would add it. So if we could play a bit with it on the mailing list coming week, I think it would be great. And if we just considering and discussing it, I think it will be good, because the public comments are there to consider them, and that, of course, doesn't lead to that we're adding it. So let's work a bit on a text. I'll propose a para, and we need to work on that on the last sentence anyhow, because it's a bit of a mess. Hi, Avery. I see Avery is saying, I'm strongly worried about constant effort to weaken reference to the UN guiding principles. I think we're just working now on adding a reference to the guiding principles. So I don't think there's a concern to weaken that language. I think quite the opposite. Okay, so we have a clear path forward for that comment. So let's see, let's go to the next comment of the UK government. And that's the last comment of the UK government, which is great, because we have 12 minutes left. Furthermore, if these UN guiding principles are not directly cross-referenced in part by the framework of interpretation, it will be a lost opportunity for the ICANN community to be a global transnational beacon for advancing corporate respect for human rights. But I think this would then also be addressed by the text that we're going to work on the list. So let's see if we can work a bit on that. So actually, I think there was the Bernie is asking something. I had the previous comment on the before last UK comment. Sorry, Bernie, I do not understand exactly your comment there.
The last discussion we just closed, I had it as referring to the before last UK comment and not the one before that, and not the before last UK comment. Now, I may have gotten that wrong, but the comments we just finished, I had associated with, and just trying to keep that clear, with the comment that starts from the UK, with the first UK comment. So I was still in the first UK comment. Maybe somewhere in the middle of there, we switched to the second one, and I didn't notice it.
You are right. We skipped one. We skipped the last one on the page. Thanks very much, Bernie. It is the comment that reads, given the private sector-led multi-stakeholder constitution of ICANN, there seems to be no inherent disruptive conflict or inconsistency created by reference to these elements in universally accepted UN guiding principles. It is hoped, therefore, that in the course of finalizing the framework of implementation following the current public consultation, there will be further consideration of the applicability of those elements of corporate responsibility contained in the UN guiding principles on business and human rights, and of the value of their due reference cited in the final document as an instrument for all the SOs and ACs, including the GAC and their respective subgroups and constituency parts, to take fully into account in their strategies for implementing the human rights core value. Which Avery thinks is a good point, but that comes into an earlier point that ICANN, the community, is not a corporation, and the UN guiding principles are built for corporations. So, Avery, how would you like to marry that? Okay, so Avery says only apply to the corporation. So I think we're going to try to do that and make that differentiation and come up with concrete text on that in the on the mailing list in the coming week. So that's good that we have a consensus there, and I think that's a very nice consensus that we that is an addition of something that we did not have. So I'm very grateful for that. So now we go to the comment of Ricardo Holmquist. We have had looked at that about the balancing of core values, and we have addressed that before, that it is not for us to change the nature of the balancing and the different prioritization of the core values, because that is out, laid out in the bylaws. And then there was a suggestion by Shiva Kanwar. Yes.
I'm sorry. So we just finished the, I entered the comments on the before last UK comment. The last UK comment, we seem to have skipped over. I agree that it's covered by the previous points. I just want to make sure that we're all okay with that.
Yeah, I read it before I read the previous one.
Okay. So,
that's why.
Idem the previous comment. All right. Thank you. Sorry.
Perfect. Then the comment of Shiva Kanwar, we've already had some... David says he's lost. David, we are at the last point of Shiva Kanwar. We've discussed all the points of the UK government.
Niels, can I make a comment, David McCauley?
David, please come in.
When I said that, I was just referring to the conversation you and Bernie had about, excuse me, the last comment, et cetera. With respect to the one before that, I just made a comment in chat. I'm not sure I'm part of that consensus that you mentioned, but it depends on the language that we come up with that's going to address it. Thank you.
Yeah, fully agreed. No, so no decision has been made except that the decision that we will work on a see if we can build some text saying that UN guiding ICANN organization might consider the UN guiding principles. But that it's up for the ICANN organization to decide that, and not for the community, because the community is not a corporation. So something like that, but we'll play with that on the list. We decided that we will try. In the last comment of Shiva Kanwar, we have been talking about that a bit, so let's see if we have language that we need to work on that. So let me just read the comment. On page 6, regarding consider which specific human rights conventions or other instruments, if any, should be used by ICANN in interpreting and implementing the human rights bylaw, It has been stated that a conflict between UN guiding principle and ICANN bylaw provision or article of incorporation must be resolved in favor of the bylaw. Tatiana says, I thought we commented on Shiva's comment last time. Yes, we did. But now we are drawing up the comments. So the last time and the time before, we did a heat map, and now we are coming up with concrete comments. We have dealt with all the comments and responses thus far, except for the one we just talked about, we suggest text for. We're checking that we do need to change text for this one. So we're trying to find consensus in doing careful analysis of the comments. So Shiva says, like to propose that in event of a conflict between any guiding principle and the ICANN bylaw provision or article of incorporation, the first thing to be done should be an attempt to reconcile the two conflicting provisions and arrive at an amicable solution that reflects the essentials of both positions, allowing the bylaws to prevail outright without any attempt to reconcile them with the concerned human rights principle would essentially limit the spirit of the core value and respect internationally recognized human rights. Tatiana, you have had a clear opinion about this. Would you summarize your opinion, and I think David as well? David? Would you say
Neil, sorry, David, I'm sorry, I was distracted for a second. Could you ask me that question again?
So Shiva Kanwar asked whether we could add text so that where we say that the article of conflict between the ICANN bylaws and anything else will always be the bylaws will always prevail. And Shiva is suggesting that we come up with an attempt to reconcile them. Is that something that we should add or do? Or
well, personally, I feel that any time there's a conflict or an apparent conflict between documents, it's always makes sense to reconcile them. But the document, and this is I'm speaking person, the document I think that is the governing document, the baseline to which you try and conform things are the bylaws. And then, excuse me. So that's my opinion. I mean, I have no problem with trying to rationalize things to see if they make, you know, if they are consistent with the bylaws. But to me, the bylaws are the ultimate authority. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Greg's hand is up. Greg, please come in.
I generally agree with David, Greg Shatton for the record. And, you know, furthermore, I think this kind of misconstrues the very idea of bylaws. And the last thing we can do, much less recommend, is that the guiding principles in the bylaws should be on an equal footing, because they're clearly not within the kind of the governance structure of ICANN. It's not even open to debate. I agree also that if consistent with the bylaws, the part of the problem here is what length do you want to go on in talking about a conflict. This is not necessarily, it's not binary at any given point. But what has to happen is that you can't compromise the bylaws. You can try to be consistent with the bylaws, but when you actually have a conflict, first you can try to attempt to resolve the conflict so that it's consistent with the bylaws, but then ultimately the bylaws need to prevail. So I think this essentially, as a matter of corporate governance, is just fundamentally flawed. I don't want to give the idea that we're saying that the bylaws mean we should give the back of the hand to any guiding principle that anybody attempts to invoke, but it's really up to anybody invoking the guiding principle or anything else to show that it is consistent with ICANN's governing documents. That's in practice what would happen. But there can't be a kind of equal weighing of the two that reflect the essentials of both positions. You can't, if the spirit, the spirit of the bylaws is exactly the wrong thing to talk about, unfortunately. Bylaws, just can't be reduced to spirit. They need to be observed as bylaws. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. And we are at the top of the hour. We aren't done with the last comment, but that gives us a very clear indication for discussion for the next time. So Bernie will compile the comments thus far. I will share some text suggestion list for the previously discussed item. And this comment from Shiva Kanwar we can discuss on the list and or in next meeting. And then we can start next time when we discuss it with Tatiana, if she then remembers her point. So thank you all very much. It's been great, working with you on this, and I feel we're very close to ending this, and it's been a great process. And we're learning still every step, so I'm very grateful for your openness and intellectual flexibility on that. Thank you all. Have a great remaining part of the day or the evening, wherever you are, and I'm greatly looking forward to see you again next week. Bye all!